Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our first of four traditions calls. My name is Sharon S., and I will be hosting the call today. We will have three speakers today, each of whom will speak on one of the traditions. And our first speaker today will be Michaeline R. from Indiana, USA, who is a Class B non-debtor trustee and is currently serving as the chair of the General Service Board. Michaeline will share on Tradition 1. After Michaeline speaks, we will hear from Alexandra B.W. from New York, USA, who is a former Class A trustee on the General Service Board. And Alex will speak on Tradition 2. And someone may be unmuted, unless that's our first speaker. And our third speaker will be Maureen C., who is also from New York, USA, and also a former Class A trustee. And Maureen will speak on Tradition 3. After all three of our speakers have shared, we will open up for questions and comments. Please take note of any questions you might have, but please hold them for the end of the call. And we'll start with our first speaker. I would now like to introduce our first speaker, Michaeline, who will share her experience on Tradition 1. Michaeline, you will have 15 minutes, and I will give you a two-minute warning. Thank you, Michaeline. And just, Michaeline, are you unmuted?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you very well.
Then I am unmuted.
Okay, thank you so much, Michaeline, and go right ahead, and I will give you a two-minute warning. Does that work for you?
That's perfect, Sharon. Thank you.
Okay,
hello, everyone. My name is Michaeline, and I am a friend of DA, and I will be talking about Tradition 1 today, and I'm going to give you a little bit, just a tiny bit, of my history. I am on Tuesday, a 29-year sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and have served in many service positions in AA. So I'm not exactly a traditions Nazi, but I'm not sure that my sponsees would agree with that. So now I take off my AA hat and I put on my DA hat. So our Tradition 1 says, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. The history of the traditions is interesting. Bill W. watched groups of AA. Many started because someone received a big book in the mail and set up a meeting to talk about the 12 steps. But of course, with little contact with the founders and the erratic thinking of newly sober members, there were a lot of unintended consequences. At one point, all the groups were asked to send in their list of membership requirements. Once analyzed, there was a total of 61 requirements that were being used in different combinations by different groups. In looking at this list, it was determined that neither Bill W. or Dr. Bob would have been qualified for AA if all those requirements had been in place for membership. A common set of guidelines were needed, as well as Rule 62, which says, don't take yourself so damn seriously. So what is unity? I've chosen some parts of the definition from the Merriam-Webster Dictionary to describe what unity is to me. So unity is the quality or state of not being multiple, or oneness. Two, a condition of harmony, accord. Three, continuity without deviation or change, as in purpose or action. And four, the quality or state of being made one. For example, a combination or ordering of parts in a literary or artistic production that constitutes a whole and promotes an undivided total effect. Since Tradition 1 is based on the concept of unity within the program and the fellowship, since the first of anything sets the tone for the rest of the items in a list, and since the entire program and fellowship rests on the idea of unity, let's look at the word for a moment and suggest some ways we can incorporate it into our lives as recovering debtors, or in my case, a recovering alcoholic. In the 12 by 12 by 12, tradition one recognizes that unity is not uniformity. Except for our shared need for recovery and our shared solutions, we DA members are a varied lot. And that's on page 65. Our common peril and our common solution help us to control our own nature and concentrate on the health of the fellowship as a whole. Self-centeredness is one of the attributes of the personality type likely to have an issue with alcoholism or compulsive debting. My recovery, my program, my fill in the blank. When we come to Debtors Anonymous, we are confronted with the first word of step one, we. In tradition one, we are also confronted with the concept of we. I'd like to point out the current DA whiteboard video available on the DA website. I think it really shows a graphic example of individuals struggling with debt, fear, and suffering, drowning alone, but always separate from each other, from the others who are also struggling. They're all in that water, but they're all separated. As they work their way up the steps into the ship, they become a we. We learn that in saving each other, we save ourselves. But we sometimes forget the importance of the we when we leave our individual meetings, pressure relief groups, and experience the joy that comes with a solvent life. We make decisions based on self when we concentrate on or dismiss portions of the program that don't seem as important to us. We don't agree with something in DA literature, so we pretend it doesn't exist when we are sponsoring people. We throw a dollar in the basket of our home group and believe we have done our service, but forget that services come from all levels of Debtors Anonymous, that there are other services that need to occur, like seeing that the meeting doors are open or the phone line is ready, that topics and speakers are provided and literature is ordered and displayed if the group sells literature. Sometimes personalities come into the meetings when we quote literature from outside of DA or discourage someone to speak on a phone meeting. We may use quotes from conference-approved literature in ways for which permission should be granted. But no one will ever know, and I'm a member, so I have... Can you hear me, Sharon? All of these things are examples of what I have seen occur since I came on the board 3 years ago as a Class B trustee. And by the way, I see them in my AA groups every day also. As human beings, we are prone to put the I before the we. But as a person who has been sponsored into service, one of the things I have learned is that my life and my program are enhanced by keeping my meetings principled and speaking of outside issues, well, outside. That the condition of harmony that comes when we are all working the same program and struggling with the same concerns and supporting the continuation of our program through the sacrifice of making all types of donations comes back to us many times over. So I have to ask myself, is DA spoken here, or is my opinion spoken here when I am in a meeting? When the group conscience makes a decision I was against, do I accept it? Especially if I've had an opportunity to speak in the minority, and the final decision is still different than what I wanted. Am I in the middle of that boat, or am I hanging off the side looking for any life raft where I think I can save myself and leave the rest behind? When I speak to a newcomer, do I speak with singleness of purpose and unity? Since I've become a Class B trustee, I have had two AA sponsees who have joined DA. I gave my first copy of the 12 and 12 and 12 to one of them because I am not a DA member, and I don't want to dilute your message. I have told both of them about DA literature and the one meeting in my town, as well as phone meetings, and both attend. When they ask me DA questions, I am quick to respond that they need to find a DA sponsor for those questions, as I am not a member of the program and cannot speak for the AA program of action, even though I am a trustee. But when it comes to the traditions, I'm well-schooled. I know that I cannot survive without unity of my program. I know that left to my own devices, I can fall into years of well-practiced character defects. On my own, in those waves of unmanageability that come from a disease of body and mind and spirit. In oneness, in harmony, in accord. I learned that I need to know how to become the best Michaeline I can be. We have a spiritual solution for our dis-ease, and we call it recovery. That is why tradition one comes first, because without that oneness, harmony, and accord, without unity, I will surely die from my untreated disease. That is reason enough for me to fall in line and practice tradition one. But a funny thing happens on the way to those traditions. When I have a maximum service to God and my fellows, when I say yes when I can to helping a still suffering member, or when I address the disunity in a meeting and seek out the best solution for all, I grow in my program. I grow in love for my fellows, and I become the best Michaeline I can be. In the long form of AA's first tradition, there is more detail of what it means, so I'm going to repeat it before I close and just change the terminology of the program. Tradition 1 long form. Each member of Debtors Anonymous is but a small part of a gray whole. DA must continue to live, or most of us will surely die. Hence, our common welfare comes first, but individual welfare follows close afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michaeline. I would now like to introduce our second speaker, Alexander B.W., who will share on Tradition 2. Alex, you will have 15 minutes, and I will also give you a two-minute warning. Does that work for you?
It does. Can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly. Thank you so much, and the volume is great. And Alex, go right ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Alexandra, and I'm a compulsive debtor. I served on the DA General Service Board from 2010 to 2017. Tradition 2 says, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. And thank you, Michaeline, for all the perfect segues into Tradition 2 and for your experience and your service. How does Tradition 2, it's my experience that Tradition 1 informs in sometimes more obvious ways and sometimes less obvious ways all the traditions. And so I appreciate the wisdom, the great wisdom of the founders of DA, who made business meetings a tool of recovery. And I know it's the tool that everybody, you know, some people love to hate, and a lot of eye rolling and so on. But I'm very grateful for it. So, how does the group conscience act toward DA? How does seeking the group conscience strengthen unity? Out in the world, it's very easy for me to believe that I can only be right if somebody else is wrong. The model of sports where somebody wins and somebody loses, but that is that's actually not what helps us achieve a group conscience. And over a lot of time and imperfectly, and of course, I have learned that my service is, if I have something to contribute, I'm still working on this, if I have something to contribute to the group conscience, then I do so, and that's my service. The first time I chaired a business meeting very early in recovery with no clue about the modified Roberts rules, I thought, okay, now I get to make the correct outcomes happen. And even though at that time, which was a long time ago, there could be tension and adversarial feelings in a business meeting, my memory is that very gently, the group intervened to protect me from myself. I learned a great deal just from that one business meeting and to take care of the group's business. So as Michaeleen mentioned, the traditions are very much me and the group. And that was a very early experience of the higher power in a way that has become very often ingrained, was the experience of seeking the group conscience in a DA business meeting. It's all about care. It's all about the group. It's not about winning and losing. And it's even, miraculously for me, not about right and wrong. And it's very much about process. When Michaeleen mentioned accepting the group process, one of the things, the aspects that makes it possible for me to accept the group conscience is to see things in process, including myself. That achieving the group conscience strengthens unity, and it is suggested. I believe the board suggests by handing out sort of modified Roberts rules at the conference. These are available through the GSRs and ISRs. That this allows the group conscience to take place because. I don't necessarily have a problem speaking up, and maybe I even need to not be called on all the time. But other people who are as integral a part of the group conscience as I may need a safer place in which to do their service and bring their views to the group conscience. So just something like not calling on anybody twice till everybody's spoken once, the minority opinion, which Michaeleen mentioned, you know, all of these to allow the group conscience to take place. There's really a lot in our tradition, too, and Michaeleen also brought up the AA tradition, too, which is a wealth. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Fun fact, I learned when on the board a few years in that the conventional term Debtors Anonymous is a not-for-profit corporation, and it has a board of directors. But consistently, the members of the board of directors of DA have elected to call ourselves trustees and not directors. Can you imagine if I introduced myself as a former director of DA? So the trusted servants and an example of not governing, it came up with the question of the preamble. We learned about 6 years ago, we learned that AA had actually not intended to give DA permission to adapt the AA preamble. To use the DA language, DA has permission for the steps and the traditions, but not the preamble. This was an error on AA's part. Because the board has legal and fiduciary responsibility for the spiritual fellowship of DA, the board determined that anything coming from the board, so that was literature, that was material on the website, that the preamble would be removed from anything that was under the board's direct responsibility. But because the board does not govern, the board would not, and each group is autonomous except in matters, except affecting DA and other groups as a whole, I said that wrong, but anyway, what the board did was to inform the group through the focus of what the board was doing, what the exact situation was, so that each group could reach an informed group conscience. So that's an example of how the board does not govern. The board is largely administrative, and we are trusted servants. A fair amount of space is given in this tradition, too, to the principle of rotation. Another aspect of recovery that I feel trickles through all the traditions as through the steps is humility, which I understand to be right size. And so we do service, we reach the end of our term of service, and then we rotate off. This way, the group is protected from me because I do not have, I can certainly think that I'm an elder, and I do have, I do have things to offer, and so does the newcomer. But I'm not, I can't become entrenched. And something a member mentioned that I thought was very interesting on this topic was that there's rotation from a particular term, but it can also happen that in any given group, the same people do service. They may rotate out of a particular office, but same people do the service. What I don't see that much in DA is a sort of willingness to race through the process, and if somebody's willing to do the same service twice, to accept that there's often that we take a breath and see if there isn't somebody else who's willing. Early on in my home group, one of my home groups in DA, there weren't a lot of us. It was a very healthy group. It was small, but it was healthy in that we had newcomers, and newcomers would get their 90 days and have their two pressure relief meetings and start doing service. But we didn't always have enough people to do service all the time. And I had done the treasury for at least two terms. And we didn't have anybody to take the service, but I had to rotate off. I didn't have the language for it. I didn't have the vocabulary for it, but I knew that it was bad for me to continue doing this and probably not good for the group. And I took the little brown bag that had our money in it, and I put it in the middle of the circle. And somebody took it up, even if we had to. I don't remember if we did this. If we had to vote to temporarily alter the requirements, as long as it was a member of the group. And so that was a sort of forced rotation. I want to come back to a little bit all over the place, and I apologize, but I am very grateful for the opportunity to hear people talk on the tradition. Substantial unanimity. So this really has to do back with achieving the group conscience. It's generally understood to be two-thirds, and because it's not a contest, because it's not about winning, and in fact a convocation, as many people listening will probably know from their own service or reports, it is asked that people not applaud after a vote is taken. Sometimes people applaud just because it's a sort of relief of tension, but it too much speaks to winning and losing, and so people are asked not to do that. One of my earliest memories, and somebody corrected me, but it's still my memory, of the first convocation that I attended, a motion came up for a vote, and it was very, very close. It passed by just a couple of votes. And my memory is that the committee that sponsored the motion, that put the motion forward, regrouped, discussed, and withdrew the motion, because the goal was not to win, it was not to pass by a couple of votes, but to reach consensus, which is, we experience it all the time. Uh, sometimes in well-established groups, for example, in one of my meetings, which has been around for a long time, a newcomer will come in and they'll see something that just seems crazy, like the way the chairs are set up, which actually is debatable. And so it's very tempting for people who've been around for a while to, or for me, I'll speak for myself, sometimes to be a little bit impatient. You know, we've been through this, we've done it, it doesn't do any good. You know, but it's important to that if that's brought up at a business meeting, that be respected, that be brought to the group conscience. That Michaeline mentioned, I don't remember exactly how you put it, but being in the middle, that newcomer is as much a member of DA.
Alex, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you. That newcomer, when she walked in the door or he walked in the door, was a full member of Debtors Anonymous. And if it's brought to the group conscience, it only does the group good. The opportunities for me. So what I learn, I'm not always comfortable talking about spirituality, but is to think in terms of opportunities. What is the opportunity in a business meeting? The opportunity for me is to learn patience, is to practice patience, to practice respect, to practice self-restraint, to practice love and service, always love and service. Those are the guidelines. And with that, I'll close, and thank you for the opportunity to be of service.
Thank you so much, Alexandra. Next, we will have Maureen share on Tradition 3. Maureen, thank you for your service. You will have 15 minutes, and I will give you a 2-minute warning if that works for you. And Maureen, you may be muted. Can anybody hear me?
Now I can. Sorry, I was me. I had to do star 6. Can you hear me now?
Oh, great. Okay. I thought I dropped the call. All right. Thanks Maureen. Does a 2-minute warning work for you, Maureen?
Can you give me a 5, a 5, and a 1? Because I want to read different pieces of the literature, and I want to make sure I shift gears enough.
Yep, I can.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for the trustees and the former trustees, the board of directors people. That was kind of funny, right? So I'm Maureen, and I'm a compulsive debtor, and I'm so happy to speak on Tradition 3 today. And I like doing these things because I like to do my homework and read things ahead of time. And I got out my AA Tradition, How It Developed by Bill W., which is one of the, a tour of the historical events that led to our unique 12 traditions. And I like this pamphlet because there's all kinds of what I call juicy tidbits in these things about the history. Like, these people were not perfect. Like, they came to these traditions because there was chaos and people weren't getting along and there was infighting and they just needed guidance, you know, about what to do as AA was growing. So there's one little thing, I can't find it today, but it talks about the clubhouses. And they started kind of poo-pooing the clubhouses because the guys would be playing cards, and then when a newcomer came in, they ignored them because they were so engrossed in their card game. I don't know. I just thought that was really funny. So anyway, I did get out the one that talked about Tradition 3, and there's some good lines in here, which I'm just going to read about. And this was referred to earlier about most of the early members of AA would have been thrown out because they slipped too much, their morals were too bad, because they had mental as well as alcoholic difficulties, or believe it or not, because they did not come from the so-called better classes of society, which I have heard or read that the Oxford Society really did want upper class people, and the drunks were generally poor and didn't have a job, and so it didn't kind of fit in with that. And it said we oldsters could have been excluded for our failure to read the book Alcoholics Anonymous or the refusal of our sponsor to vouch for us as a candidate, because I think literally people were sponsored. They had to be invited because most of the meetings were in people's homes. So it talks about being a worthy alcoholic. So at the end of this, it says, this is why we all judge the newcomer less and less. If alcohol is an uncontrollable problem to him and he wishes to do something about it, that's enough for us. He signs nothing, agrees to nothing, promises nothing, we demand nothing. He joins us on his own say-so. And it says nowadays in most groups he doesn't even have to admit he's an alcoholic. He can join AA on the mere suspicion that he may be one, even though he may already show the fatal symptoms of our malady. And I think that's true when people don't come in. Like, denial is not a bad thing. I didn't know how bad shape I was when I came in, and I had my first PRG, and the man said to me, this is a mess. And I was like, what are you talking about? He said, this is a mess, and if you stay in the middle of DA, then your life will change, and you won't recognize it in 2 to 3 years. And that was completely the case. But I didn't know, like, if you look at a balance sheet, like, I didn't have $7 to buy the currency of hope. I had, like, borderline no money in my checking account and all kinds of debt. Like, that's not a healthy balance sheet, you know. But I didn't know, and I just needed somebody to say, he just said, just start writing down your numbers. That's all. Like, I just needed that. I didn't need to be beaten over the head going, blah, 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 you're this old and you don't have any retirement, or, like, nobody said those things to me. So, you know, there's all kinds of good things in here, but I wanted to talk more about the Tradition 3 from our wonderful new, which is not so new now. Maybe it's, 4 years old, 12 and 12 and 12. I think this book is maybe 2 years old that includes the traditions. And I'm reading it on my Kindle Amazon on my phone, which is phenomenal. And if I can figure out how to purchase it, anyone can. So some of the things that are in here, and I look at this as an opportunity to improve my own spiritual development, because I'm not good at this stuff. I constantly need reminders about how to act in DA, how to think in DA, how to act at work, think in meetings, act in meetings. So it says that individuals who have been attracted to DA may include individuals who debt habitually, spend compulsively, shop, under-earn, live below their means, overcommit their time, and so on. And sometimes I get aggravated because I want it to be pure debtors. I want pure debtors. I want them to identify themselves as such. I don't want to hear about any of these other things. I just want to talk about solvency and not debting. And this is saying everybody's included. You know, people might come in 10 years later going, oh, I forgot about my credit cards, or, oh, I forgot that my mother, like, bought me a car for my whole life, you know. It's not up to me to, like, point out the faulty thinking that people have. What else does it have? It talks about people experiencing foreclosure and bankruptcy. It's not a requirement for nor an impediment to our membership. There's no one in DA who's going to check our credit record and say that our credit score is too high or too low for DA membership. I mean, it sounds funny, but that may be something that's scary to people, that people come in really ashamed. I've heard that people
Marina,
come in.
Marina, 5 minutes.
Thank you. Come in because of teeth and taxes. That was me. It was like when I first got a job where I had benefits. I mean, I didn't ever go to the dentist. I mean, he was so nice to me. I just, like, went every week for, like, 2 months. There was so much work to do. And I owed the IRS. I was petrified of the IRS. I had an installment plan, and I just knew I was going to get another one, because I was self-employed and I didn't put aside money for taxes. And that was another thing at my first PRG. The woman said, you don't make enough money to pay your taxes. I really thought that I was just morally bankrupt, that I was stupid, and that how, you know, it just completely baffled me how people, like, bought houses and got a corporate job and moved up the ladder. I just wanted to work as a waitress in a bar and, you know, go on vacation all the time. I just didn't know how people so-called got a real life. So, you know, it needs to be said that nobody's going to check your credit score. Nobody's going to, income level and social status are irrelevant. That's why the anonymous part of this program is so amazing, that people can come in and it doesn't really matter. They might come from millionaires. They might, you know, have a lot of family money they inherited, but they want to be more self-sufficient. People can have declared bankruptcy 5 times. Like, it doesn't matter. The only requirement is a desire to stop incurring new unsecured debt. People might have old debt. People get confused, I think, that they don't think they're solvent unless they paid off all their debt. That's not true. People come in that I've known that have, like, tons of student loans, that have a professional, you know, degree in Oh, hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loans. And over time, many, many years, even decades, they just, you know, chip away at it, and then it's, you know, paid off. But that's not why we're here. We're just not, for me, I'll just define my solvency. I'm solvent today if I haven't used a credit card, if I haven't bounced a check, if I paid my bills on time, if I haven't borrowed anything without collateral, and I've paid for goods and services at the time of use. And I've heard, I'm going to quote Alexandra, like, I can't buy a hamburger from you on Monday and pay for it on Wednesday. I don't know. I just thought that was really funny. Right. I can't go and buy my eggs at the farmer's market and say, oh, I forgot my money. You know, I'll come back. And they will say, people will say, you know, it's okay. It's okay. Come back next week. You're always here. No, I can't do that. I need to pay my dog walker ahead of time, things like that. We avoid bias based on race, ethnicity, age, sexual or gender orientation, ability or disability, religion or lack of religion, politics, socioeconomic status, and other such factors. The only important question is whether an individual has a desire to stop incurring unsecured debt. And it's up to the individual to answer that question. It's not up to me to kind of grill them and just say, well, you have to cut up your credit cards today, or that's a really stupid idea to put them in the freezer, or, you know, whatever. I might be able to, like, share my experience, strength, and hope, but people come here, I've heard Sharon say, like, with different kinds of brokenness, you know, and I had mine, and I spoke at a meeting actually at 9, and it says, like, it doesn't really matter. I think it's in the Debtors Anonymous pamphlet, like, why we debted. Like, it doesn't matter. I always say it's like, you know, if my father had let me have a paper route instead of being babysitter, like, I would have, like, become a real business person. Like, I just don't want to hang on to that anymore. I'm 62. I'm maybe going to work for 20 years, I hope, but I just don't want to have to figure out, like, why I debted. I just want to live this spiritual way of life and learn these principles that I get to learn and get forced to learn and make mistakes on all the time and realize, like, Maureen, quit rolling your eyes. Like, just, like, don't assume. Like, somebody really helped me at a meeting last week. I'll just share, like, so I have a parking garage. I'm renting a house up north, and I have an apartment in New York City, and I have a parking garage now because I needed a car up there. So when I went to park my car, the guy who didn't speak super good English, he said, I need the form. I'm like, what form? And he said, the company was supposed to send you a form. And so I was getting mad at everyone, the guy at the parking garage, the guy on the phone, the guy with the app that I got it from. And he said, one of the guys said, it could have gone to your spam. And I was so mad, and my friend in the meeting said, did you look in your spam? No. I don't know where it is. She said, it's in more. So I go home, and lo and behold, it was there. So people don't have to have 50 years of solvency to be able to help me with my day-to-day living. Like, I get stuck with technology. I get stuck going to a
Maureen,
place.
Maureen, you have 5 minutes left.
Thank you. Going to a new place on the subway. Like, I just need to, for me, like, it's a disease of isolation that I need to not judge people in the program. Like, lots of people can help me. Like, for my inner earner circle of people, I need people with long-term solid recovery who have the same definition of solvency that I do and talk to them on a regular basis. But there's a lot of people that can help me with lots of different things, you know. And if I'm just going to have all these prejudices in front of me, like, you should be blah, 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 I'm just going to be alone and isolated and suffering in a way that I don't have to. So what else? We recognize that we have been brought together by our common desire and are kept together by the mutual solution found in the steps, tools, and fellowship. So there's a lot of good tools like record keeping, which is my favorite, and go to meetings. But the tools, I mean, the steps are really important because I have all these blocks that separate me from, you know, from the people that I work for, which I really like the work that I have a lot. But I still have fears. I get intimidated by people who have, like, whatever, you know, lawyers and tax preparers and bankers. Like, I have a status, you know, of, like, those people know a lot and I should be afraid of them. And other people, sometimes I have to deal with customer service people and I get really mad at them because I'm making assumptions. And I'm just getting myself all backwards, you know, like, everybody has something to offer and we're all equal. Like, I can't hear that enough. So anyway, I don't really know if I have anything else to say. I think this one is about, for me, about judgmentalism. And but, you know, when it says, I don't know what the tradition is, but the bleeding deacon versus the elder statesman, like, we all go through these stages, you know. It's like, it's typical if people are a bleeding deacon on their way to being an, you know, elder statesman. And I make mistakes on this, but I'm on the newcomer greeter a lot on the 7 a.m. meeting, so I try to help people who are new. And I was thinking today, like, I feel like Delilah on the radio station when people call in. And but I like to be prepared for this. I like to know the website, which has a lot of great new stuff on it, which was referred to the video. It was very cool. I like to know the literature because I don't know things. I just want to say, if someone wants a PRG, like, why don't you read the PRG pamphlet? Like, I'm not the expert here. So it also says in here, we don't judge ourselves. You know, it says we are not judged, and we are not judged, and we don't judge. When we find ourselves wanting to criticize or gossip, I think it's okay to, like, reason things out. It's a quote from Al-Anon, but sometimes I just need to run stuff by, like, this is what I heard on a meeting, or what do you think about it? I think that's okay. But there is a difference with, you know, judging. And it says in the big book, like, we talk about each other a great deal, but it's in the spirit of it, you know, that's important. So I think that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Maureen. And I will now stop our recording.